Hello, Nikki speaking.
Hello, Nikki Moffat, how are you?
Hello, Kirsty Rice, how are you? How's your Nespresso Depresso going?
Oh, well, not only have my children left me now, but my husband's gone as well. So I've currently got two kids in Oz and a husband in Jakarta, and it's just the boys and I that are here in Qatar. They actually said at dinner last night it's very quiet without the girls. I think that might be a bit Nespresso Depresso as well.
Well, I'm here in Hamburg. I've got a public holiday and rain forecast all day. A Hamburg weather update and all my family in the attic together. Can't wait. Big day.
Should we talk about the podcast?
Okay, let's do it.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and welcome to our new and improved Two Fat Expats podcast, where we talk about all things expats, growing up our children, finding the best locations to live, and not blowing our expat dough. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
Well, you know, I'm huddled in the study telling everyone to stay off the internet so we can record the podcast. Hopefully we won't go down because it's a public holiday here. Here in Germany.
It's so quiet in the background. How are you keeping them all quiet?
I've threatened them. I've told them they can't make noise.
Okay, Nikki, geographically challenged. Are you geographically challenged this week?
No, thankfully not. But I did want to mention this week we had a member who put out a bit of a call for help. She's based in the US, so she's American. Her sister and her mother were in Amsterdam on their way to transfer to a river cruise, and her mother fell down at the airport and broke her ankle, had to be rushed to hospital and have her operation.
Oh.
So she thought of our group and put out a call. Actually, she was referred to our group and put out a call to say to look for new for expats in Amsterdam who might be able to help. And can I tell you, the fatties were on it. They were immediately, so she was looking for help for someone who spoke Dutch to call the airline and help out with sort of moving their luggage around. They landed in Amsterdam on a very tricky weekend because it was the King's birthday, which is very busy in Amsterdam, and it's also the middle of tulip season. I'm sure you've seen lots of lovely photos in your Facebook streams.
Yes.
So it was a really tricky time to get accommodation and all that kind of stuff. And the people in the group were amazing. So not only people in our group, but I think there is obviously crossover to other groups. So the American Women's Club of Amsterdam helped, but we have in our group, Kirsty, I'll have you know, the consulate chief in Amsterdam from the US consulate, and she offered a direct line of help, which I thought was fantastic. Then a week later, the member posted an update to say that her mum and sister are now flying home to San Francisco. Her mother's been admitted to hospital for another operation. But to thank everyone so much who offered assistance, and especially to those who provided her sister and mother with housing and transportation in Amsterdam, we could not have gotten through this without you. So I thought that was so...
Seriously, someone provided housing?
Yes. I actually saw someone. I was following the post for a while and I saw someone say, oh, I've got a visitors tonight, but like I've got a free room from tomorrow for whatever. So I don't know what, how and up or where she stayed, but I think that pretty much everyone pulled together and from this group and from others and just really helped out. And I think that that is just fantastic. And I think it's a real credit to the group.
Hey, look, that is kind of along the same lines. It's that unexpected, isn't it? Like you plan this great holiday, we're going on a cruise. I have to say, that Danube River cruise, whoever's doing the marketing for that at the moment, it is spreading wide and far because I actually know like two sets of not so much people our age but our parents' age, Nikki, like that are doing these river cruises in Amsterdam. I've had three lots of my friends' parents do them. So they must be the thing to do, you know, whether it's the Rocky Mountaineer in Canada, it seems,
yes,
now.
Or the Alaska cruise.
Yes, yes. Yes. But I was going to say, just reminded me of a message we had that came through from Amanda. Similar but different in that she had accepted a post, I think, in Turkey and ended up in hospital. I might just fish out that message from her and we'll have a listen.
Hi, ladies. It's Amanda Settle here, currently in Istanbul on a short contract for a few months. I've been catching up on your blog, on your podcasts, which are fabulous, by the way, as always. And there was one thing that I wanted to bring up, and I know it's not necessarily something we think about very often as expats, but it's the healthcare packages that come with our contracts. I got here and after just 2 weeks found myself quite seriously ill in hospital. And only by accident found out that the healthcare package that I got with the short contract, it was fabulous. I had the best treatment in the best private hospital, and I'm very much on the mend now and feeling great. But I also know that I've been in places in the world where the healthcare I have had with my job has been the bare minimal, where I've had to pay out a huge amount myself if I had been ill. And I guess it's just something that I've never really myself put too much thought to in the past, but myself and my husband are now getting that bit older and I'm starting to think a bit more about it. Maybe those expats who've got children think more about it. I don't know, but just thought maybe it's something you'd like to bring up in the podcast. Anyway, keep the podcast going. Really enjoying them, particularly all the money stuff, because I'm hopeless at that too. So thanks, Kirsty. And listen to you again soon. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, I think she just raises such a good point. I wonder, Nikki, do you know, having four kids and travelling with four kids, I've always been very, very aware of what our healthcare package is. I don't know, how about you? Is that sort of top of your list of expat contract negotiations?
Yeah, it's definitely something I've always been aware of as well. We have a lot of medical issues in our house. So, yeah, I always like to have a look and see what it is and what's going to happen next and how it's going to work out when we move to a new location. It's definitely one of the first things I ask about. But it's one of those things that if you don't have kids or if you're a young single or something like that, you might not be paying as much attention to.
Yeah, like I think those who are in baby mode, they're very aware of, well, how much is it going to cost us to have this baby? Because, you know, I know, like there are quite often, if you choose to go public and you're happy with whatever the public hospital provides, I guess you've then got to make sure, do you qualify as a non-citizen in that country? Like, while you may think it's all free and groovy, does that also still apply to you? But also, if you're, I know here in Qatar, if you're going to have a baby at the public hospital, it will mean that you won't have your husband by your side because they don't allow men into the labour ward. So you might decide, okay, well, then I'm going to go private for that. That could be a $20,000 exercise. So you've got to be really conscious. Now, I think probably if you're out of baby mode and you're young and healthy, you probably never think anything's going to happen to you because you're 6 foot tall and bulletproof. But, you know, I know that was a big thing for me when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Is healthcare here was fantastic, I thought, for me. And the chemo that I had here in Qatar was pretty much free. I think I paid all of about $3 for an injection when I left the building. But then, of course, my chemo radio then fell over the Christmas period where I wanted to be home with my family and take the children home for Christmas holidays. And I paid out of my own pocket in Australia because, you know, I was a non-resident at that stage. So, yeah, I think we have to be so aware of what a sudden hiccup can cost us. And I think we think about it more when we're going on holiday and getting our holiday travel insurance.
Yes, our holiday health insurance.
Yes, than we do when we're thinking about our everyday expat health insurance. Like, really, because how often, Nikki, do you hear someone say, oh, yeah, we're fully covered, and then something happens and they discover, oh, actually, it's not quite what HR led us to believe. So, Nikki, Becky, expat tech.
Okay, so expat tech, I just wanted to talk briefly about the show notes because that's something else that came up in the Facebook group this week. Someone was looking for your broccoli salad recipe and they said, I'm looking for Kirsty's broccoli recipe and I'm checking the show notes and I can't find them. And then someone immediately was able to post a link. Thankfully, we've got little active fatties on the job. But I wanted to talk about the show notes and what they are and where they are and what we do. So the show notes are found on the website www.twofatexpats.com. They're very brief. They're just a couple of sentences about the overall content of what we talk about and our topics for the week and any interviews that we do. And then we always provide links to specific things we talk about, TV shows, articles, books, etc. And why do we do it? Well, we do it to help other people find things that we talk about. The other thing I wanted to say was I just Googled Two Fat Expats broccoli salad and the right show note group just popped right up for me.
So, Nikki, that chickpea and broccoli salad is a Hetty McKinnon recipe from the community cookbook. There's now another one called Neighbourhood as well. Yes, go to the show notes, and I think you've done an absolutely stellar job at showing, explaining how to go to the show notes. I get confused when people talk about show notes because it's actually just your website, isn't it? There's not some special, you know, when I used to hear podcasters talk about show notes, I used to think that there was some magical way that you'd be able to go to iTunes or, you know, look on your podcast app and see them, which I think you can if you push the information button. But really, we're basically saying to people, go to our website, twofatexpats.com, and you'll be able to find everything there that we've talked about and all the links to it, right?
And yes, that's right. But can I also say that in every podcast app that you use, the show notes are attached to the episode. So you can also don't necessarily have to go to the website, although we love when you go to the website because then you can press the microphone and send us a message. In lieu of that, in your podcast app that you have, when it talks about the episode, you should either be able to see a link or you just flick through it and we'll have notes and have the same notes that you find on the website. And then those links on there should work also from whatever podcast app you're using. So you can go straight to whatever you're looking for, like a broccoli salad.
The other thing on Expat Tech, Danielle jumped in, our most favourite Outback expat, Miss Shardy, and she talked about the My Eyes Only password app.
Yes, so that's the one she uses, and I think that's has a small cost associated with it, but she has found that easy and good to use, so she wanted to give us feedback on that.
Hi, Miss Shardy.
Hello, Miss Shardy. And Miss Shardy's off to New York, and she went to our Two Fat Expats group and asked for feedback and got quite a lot of good feedback, I think, on what she should do when she goes.
Expat relationships. I have to ask you about this because I think this is just such a gorgeous story about those long-term. You know, I'm a big sucker for the romantic people staying in contact and we're all not going to be mentally scarred from our expat lives and our long-term relationships. But just to set the scene, I think it was 25 years ago that you went on an exchange program, bizarrely, to Germany. Is that right?
It is. So to 1983, when I must have been a toddler, I came on an exchange program. To northern Germany, and it turns out that where I was only about just a bit under an hour's drive from Hamburg. So I was on a farm there for about 8 months, and then I, you know, spent the rest of the year doing the Australian backpacking, new railing travel thing. So that was my sort of first ever introduction into sort of a bit of a travelling life.
So when you lived with them, did you have to speak German all the time, or did you sort of go back and forth with English and German when you were there?
No, I did go back and forth with English and German. There was a mother and father and an Oma, which is a grandmother, and another farm worker. And then they had two sons who were my age, who were sort of a year or two younger than me. And so the four main family members spoke perfect English. So that was not very good for my German.
Yeah, so this is back in the dark old ages before email and Facebook and all those sort of things. So you spent your time with them and then you went off and travelled some more. And then did they ever come to Australia and see you?
You know, funny you should say that. I think in 2000 for the Olympic, the Omar, so Omar Ani, who didn't speak any English, came on a tour to Australia. So Sam and I went and we had a sort of morning tea with her, and my German was really bad by then because I'd been away for so many years and whatever. So we had a very hilarious morning with her and her friends, all who didn't have great English. But we had a lovely time. But that was kind of, I think, the last time that I fell out of touch with them after that. So the letters and everything, when we moved to Hong Kong, I think I didn't send any more letters after that. I think I gave up my letter writing career. So I was looking for a way to get back in contact with them when I moved to Hamburg. And I found an email address online. I sent them an email and then I didn't hear back. And then I just let it drop, which is bad. But coincidentally, last week I had to do, my son was on an internship, which is kind of like a work experience thing for school. He went to a dog boarding kennel. And it turns out this place is like 10 minutes from where the farm was.
No way.
Yeah, really, really weird. So I thought,
did you recognise anything? Did you kind of say, oh, I feel like I've been here before?
Yeah, a little bit, because I knew. I looked it up. I looked where I was going. I was like, oh, God, that's right near where I used to be. So I did a trial run down there because I said to the school I'd do the driving, but it turns out, depending on traffic, it can be up to sort of a 2 to 3 hour round trip down and back. So I did a trip by myself down there and I was driving going, wow, this all feels very familiar. And so I drove to the dog boarding kennel and then I put in my nav the address where I used to live. So I went there and I looked around and I looked very strange because it's a tiny, tiny, tiny village with like 5 houses and farms all around it. So the houses are in the village and then the farms are all around it. That's how it works in Germany. And then I saw sort of the family and I was like, okay, they're still here. So I thought, okay, I'm going to reach out again. I'm going to do something. So they're all busy and doing things on tractors and stuff. So I decided I would write a note and put it in the letterbox.
Yeah.
Next time I came down with my son, which I did. And as soon as I put it in the letterbox and sort of drove away, less than a couple of hours later, my phone rang and it was my old host mother, Anna. And she was so excited to hear from me. And she said, oh, you have to come. And, you know, and I was so embarrassed to tell her that I'd already lived here for over a year.
Yeah. The exchange that went on, who organised it?
You know, I can't even remember. I think I did it. It was when I finished university. As I said, I was a toddler. It was a program. It was an agricultural exchange program. So it was to work on farms. So
yes,
studied agricultural economics at university. So that was just my extension of me just sort of like having a year away and not having to enter the real world yet. Anyway. Okay,
but you saw them and you called out, I love it. I think it's gorgeous. Okay, Nikki, I want to talk about an anonymous post just talking about expat relationships. So on our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, there was an anonymous post this week, and you and I were a little bit nervy about putting this post out there because it was so personal, and it's a post, well, I'll read just the first bit of it to people so they can get an idea of the danger. So a woman wrote to us and said that 3 weeks ago her husband told her that he wanted to separate after 10 years of marriage. They've been together for 20 years. He told her that he's been unhappy for about 4 years and he said he's been trying to tell her for that long but she wasn't listening. She wrote, he said he wanted us to live together to bring the kids up as friends and that was as they were the most important thing and that he doesn't want the children to grow up from a broken marriage. She said she was devastated about it and she wanted to work out how to mend the marriage and she said she really loved him. And he wasn't kind of ruling out them getting back together, but he sort of didn't think it was good for right now. And what he, I guess I'm trying not to be judgy here, but he also thought maybe they could be separated but live together and he could still see other people. And she went on to sort of write the details of it all. And you and I posted it thinking, oh, this could be terrible because people could be very harsh or hurtful or whatever. I have to say, Nikki, the comments on that post were beautiful. Like, it's just no other word for it. They were so generous and understanding, but also the solidarity between the women and what people were advising her. It was one of the best posts, and it was one of those posts that I was actually out on the weekend and someone came up to me and said, "Kirsty, that Two Fat Expats group is one of the best groups I've ever seen on Facebook, in the fact that that woman, the advice that she got and the feeling around her of how people just got around her to support her and build her up was fantastic."
Yeah, I totally concur with all those comments, because I, as you said, we were a bit nervous to post it, and then everybody was so supportive but also practical. So it turns out he has been dating some other people, and so they suggested that she be tested for STDs, which I yes. thought was something you might not necessarily think about yourself when you're dealing with all the emotions of the things. But very supportive, and lots of people who had been through similar things or had knowledge or mentioned other, you know, mentioned groups and mentioned processes. And the other thing was that she sent us an update, and she said the update was fantastic. She said, you know, "Thank you for posting it, and thanks for all the comments, and I understand now that it's not my fault." So I guess that she'd been feeling that it was her fault that they were in this situation.
Yeah, her original comment, and I didn't go in and sort of say the whole thing, but yeah, the general feeling of her original comment was, "I know that I've had my issues," and you know, she was basically saying she hadn't been a happy, wonderful, you know, doting wife, and that, you know, that maybe she was a bit to blame. And people just jumped in straight away saying, "What? No." But yeah, the actionable stuff that people said about, "See an attorney to go so that you know your options, you know, get an STD testing kit, or you know, go and get tested for an STD." Someone said, "Don't play the pick me, pick me," as that's what he wants. He loves the attention of sort of, you know, lots of women. That his behaviour was just this classic, you know, lying and then placing the blame on her. I thought it was really interesting that women who had been through it we're saying, "Oh my God, it's like there's a handbook for this stuff." And on that, we've done two expat divorce podcasts. So one is actually called Expat Divorce, where we talk to a couple of women who have talked about what it meant for them financially, logistically, geographically, the whole thing as expats. And then we did another one, Nikki, about My Expat Life Cost Me My Children, where we talked about women, what a divorce had meant to their family life. But, yeah, the phrase that kept coming up is, "He can't have his cake and eat it too." That phrase obviously travels across many different cultures. One woman said, he not only has his cake and he's eating it too, but he's licking his fingers in the process while you beat yourself up about it. I just loved what these women said to her. And, yeah, I loved it. When she came back with the update, she sounded like a different person. Yeah, hopefully she gets the outcome that she's wanting from all of it. But special, special, special thank you to everybody that just managed to keep it nice and be so supportive. Now, Nikki, expat kids.
Okay, so I've just told the story about my driving. So last week I did a lot of driving when I was taking my son to and from his work experience. So we spent a lot of extra time together. I wasn't making him listen to any more podcasts about porn, I promise. But we were listening to some very good things. We listened to The Guilty Feminist together and he was loving it, 15-year-old boy loving it. So by the end of the week I had him all sorted out on that. We listened to one of those episodes, which is about identity, which was actually a great fit for a teenage boy, because he was nodding along to the conversation, and you know, he really could feel when people were talking about how to find your identity in the world. There's another about comparisons, about how we compare ourselves to ridiculous things. And so The Guilty Feminist podcast I recommend for teenage boys. Good listening. started feminism.
That's a good one. That is a good one, actually. I haven't enforced my podcast on the kids for a while, and I need to get back into it because, of course, you know, the whole thing with teenagers in the car is they tend to put their earpods in to listen to what they're listening to. It's the constant struggle, isn't it? Where are we up to? Expat money?
Expat money. Let's go.
Okay, so I have a Don't Blow Your Dough episode in the works with my husband, but we're just working on a couple of last little things. And one of the reasons is we wanted to cover transferring money from country to country. And I actually put a poll in the Facebook group to ask people how they transferred money, and it made me realise that we're all coming at it from different angles. So when we are transferring money here, it's basically to pay off our mortgage. You know, we take our US dollars here, put them in a US dollar account in Australia, and then transfer them over to an Australian account, if that makes sense. And we bank with HSBC, and we have tended to just do it on a day when we think the exchange rates are good for doing that through the bank. Nikki, you tend to use different transferring, like different money companies, right, whether it's TransferWise or Revolut or one of those. So I had put a poll asking people, what do? You just do it through the bank and cop the fee? Do you use TransferWise? Do you use Revolut? Do you use, is it OFX? There's a couple of different ones that have got very similar names. Anyway, I was amazed that the majority of the group said we transfer through the bank and cop the fee. Did that surprise you?
It did surprise me because there are so many different ways to do it. But on the other hand, it didn't surprise me because once you do something and it works, you just keep doing it. It's one of those things that if you don't think about what the other options are and you don't actively pursue them and what you're doing works for you, you're okay with it.
Yeah.
So I think those thing about phone plans, about cable TV, all that kind of stuff, you just sign up and you go with what works, and as long as it keeps working, you just let it keep ticking over.
And you don't but one think of the things, about the cost. You forget that you're continually getting pinged. Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that I thought was good and that I added to that conversation on that poll was a website that I recently discovered also through our Facebook group because someone had suggested it another time, is Monito.com, which doesn't include banks, so I guess you can always get your own bank's rate from the bank, but it determines the rates and charges by the country that you're transferring from and to, and it shows you all the options. So obviously, like, you can't say just always use TransferWise because TransferWise mightn't have the best rates for different currencies on that particular day. So I just thought it was a cool website. Did you go and have a look at it?
I did, and the interesting thing was it gave me the name of a company that wasn't any of the companies I'd mentioned. It was like Currency Fair or someone like that.
Yes,
yeah. And it showed me, you know, what I would get. Now, what ended up happening for us this time is because we had school fees that we were paying. That was why we were doing it this time. And the school fees needed to be paid. And when we looked at all of our different options, HSBC ended up being the best option at the time because, A, we rang them and said, what's the best deal you can do? Because quite often if you speak to them over the phone, the best deal is different than what you see online. So it's always worth the phone call. It's always worth ringing up the bank and saying, you've quoted this online, TransferWise has quoted this, or Revolut has quoted this, what's the best deal you can do? And they will ask you how much you're trying to transfer. And if you can save it and transfer a larger amount, you're always going to be better off. So if you were going to transfer, say, $9,000, but if it wasn't urgent and you could save it and do it in two months and do $20,000, you're going to get a much better exchange rate. And B, the second thing that made the difference for us too, is it was going to happen automatically with HSBC, whereas if we were going to use the exchange service suggested, it was going to take up to 3 days for that money to hit the account. So we took the option of going bank to bank.
So it was instantaneous with HSBC?
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was. It was done.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. So it was in. It was available to use in your Australian account by the end of the day.
Yes.
Interesting, because I mean, HSBC in the US, if you transfer from one account to another, it's not there for 3 days. They use the money in the meantime.
Yes.
So yes. I guess it depends on different banks, different countries. So
yes, and the same could be said for the exchange companies as well. I don't know what to call them. What do you call a TransferWise and a Resolute, like a money exchange company, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess. So, I don't know what the official term is. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah. I don't know what the official term is either. But it will take 3 days with them, right?
Yes, because they use the money. And the whole point is they make money off it while they're moving it. I mean, that's what they do.
Yeah.
And that's why they give you better rates, because they do something with your money on the way through. Why sometimes they can give you better rates. I mean, and as someone pointed out, is that a bank is often the safest bet, because banks have guaranteed funds. So some of these companies that you're moving with aren't necessarily banks. So if they go broke in the middle of you moving your money, you might never see that money again. So that's something to always consider.
Ooh, that's a lovely thought, isn't it?
Never happened so far, but it's a possibility. It's an absolute possibility.
Yeah. So I guess, Dickie, the major points of this are to ring your bank and actually talk to a person to get your best rate available. Don't take what's online. And to check how long is it going to take for that money transfer to come through, because there's obviously two different scenarios with the same organisation here, where you could bank with that bank in the USA and it might take 3 days, or you might be able to get it to happen within 24 hours if you're dealing with a different country. Who knows? So I guess they're the two things. But I would definitely go to Monito. I would go to Monito, get the best exchange rate you can get, and then ring your bank and have your script ready for, hey, I can get this rate. What's the best you can do? Can you match it? And that's something we should put on Don't Blow Your Dough, I think, is to write a little script for what to say when you're looking for the best exchange rate.
Perfect. Great idea. Make notes.
Okay. Make notes. Location, location, location. Where did you take us this week?
Well, Kirsty, we're up to F this week, and F is for Fiji. Siobhan has lived in Fiji for the past 11 years, and her three children are now Fijian citizens as well as Australian citizens, to make life, make it easier to live there. And also for Siobhan starting her business, it was easier to become a citizen, which she has done. So she has the two passports. And so we need to hear the Fat Five questions all about Fiji.
Okay, I'll have a listen now.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love with Fiji?
I love Fiji. I mean, I'd give it an easy 9, which sounds generous. It may be because I've had a glass of wine before I started answering these questions. Even though it's your morning, it's my evening. Because there's a certain Fiji factor. You've just got to laugh, otherwise you'll cry. I mean, you've probably heard the expression WTF, and most English speakers would recognise that acronym, but we call that Welcome to Fiji, because it's very much the same thing. You think, really, that just wouldn't happen anywhere else.
Uh-huh. Welcome to Fiji. I like it. So you've been there 12 years, so you might have a lot of these, and so it can be recent or past or whatever, but what's your best local find?
My best local find. Well, it's funny. There's so many different little tiny things. You mean like in an activity or a shopping purchase?
Whatever works for you.
Okay.
You just stumbled across something, you've gone, this is so cool. Could be anything.
And this is quite unusual. There's a rainforest just outside Suva, and it's only probably half an hour drive or so. And I used to go every week and run through the forest with my dog, swim in the waterfalls and just remember, I mean, I just, apart from the obviously the good exercise and you're running through a rainforest, which is gorgeous, and mostly I'd find nobody in there. So I'd have, because I'd go early in the morning, so I'd just have an hour to myself in a rainforest, which is great headspace. After I've run into the forest and I'm swimming in the waterfalls and stuff, it was just such a great reminder. Oh, my God, I live here.
Yeah.
You know, like this is why you moved here. You know, this is lovely. So for me, it's a very personal find, and it just worked for me for many years. It stopped working for me. I'm not running there all the time anymore, but it is a very special place. And for me, that was the find of, you know, being able to cope with the diesel buses and some of the downsides. That was a good find for me.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. So on the opposite side almost, what drives you crazy?
The taxi drivers drive me fairly crazy. We have cheap taxis here, and the road rules, and rules is with a little R, not a capital R. It's very chaotic on the road. I've taught my oldest two children to drive, and it's sort of, I've had to teach them a sort of defensive driving course while they're on their L's, because just because somebody is indicating left in the left-hand lane doesn't mean they're not about to come into your lane and turn right.
Where's one place you'd love to live?
Well, you know, I do see all these things on, if I'm looking at Fiji, I'd like to live on one of those islands by myself, but, you know, without the work of having to make my own bread. I see the rich and famous apparently come to Fiji all the time, and they've got a very different lifestyle to mine here in Fiji. So if I was in Fiji, I'd like to live like they're living. And, you know, I live in a, you know, tropical island paradise, and, you know, Suva City is not a tropical island paradise, but I'd really like to live downtown, like Hong Kong. I just fell in love with Hong Kong last year. I could see myself there in a heartbeat.
I hear you. You know I hear you. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about this way of life or living an expat life?
Do you know, I passed this on to all my friends when I first got here, and I was really struggling, small children, three small children, and not working, no family or friends, no community liaison officer through the place, Pete worked, nobody holding my hand or anything. And luckily, the expat community here is fantastic, and somebody gave me the piece of advice. I said, how have you survived here for 5 years living like this? And she was Dutch, and she said, I've got two tips for you. Never be afraid to meet new people. Even if you think you're on your way out, always be open to meeting new people, and don't just hang with your nationality. I think thank you, Arena, if you're out there, they have served me well. Those two pieces of advice, I still love meeting new people, even though I've been here for 11 years, because I get the refreshing where people say, really? You can smoke there? Or really, it's $5 to go to the movies and it's air conditioned? Why doesn't everybody go every day? You know, things like that, you forget. So it keeps Fiji fresh for you, which is great.
That's good, because often longer serving residents get a little bit jaded by speaking to the newbies, but you sound like you still enjoy it after.
Well, because I remember that, and that was the other thing. When I came, I really struggled with that. I struggled with the fact that people felt, well, she's only here for 3 years, there's no point in meeting her. And I thought, really? Is that how you make friends? And so, like, having both Arena tell me that advice of always be open to meeting new people, and then hearing and being treated by people like, well, you're only here for 3 years, and here I am now 12. All those people, needless to say, have left now. You know, you think, well, gee, the world is just a small place. Why, you know, be kind. You know, just be nice.
So I guess following on from that and related to that, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned?
The biggest, it sounds like I'm a bit of a mum. I just turned 50 at Easter, so this is my mum tip. In Fiji, if you think it's not safe, then it's not safe. Don't, like, back yourself. Like, just because you're going on a guided tour And the guide has said, yes, yes, everybody jumps from this rock to that rock. You know, nobody's ever fallen. Or, no, no, the boat's not overloaded. It never tips. It's fine. If you think it's not right, don't believe them just because they have a badge. Coming from Australia is such a nanny state. You sort of, you know, you're so used to doing risky activities, but it's an organised thing, so you know, oh, well, it wouldn't happen if it wasn't safe. For people who have lived in countries like Fiji or many other nations, you know, it sounds like such a sensible thing, but coming from Australia, we're so such a nanny state that we just believe people, oh, this is their job. They wouldn't let us do it unless it was safe. It's just not the case in Fiji.
If you think the boat's going to tip over, that's fantastic. Oh, she was great. And did you say Siobhan has her own business there now?
She does. She started a business called Find My Feet Fiji, which she looks after new arrivals. So people who are just arriving as expats, which sounds like she's pretty well set up to do that. She's got the right attitude.
Is there a big expat community in Suva?
Apparently there is quite a big expat community.
What are they doing there?
I don't know what industries there are. That's, oh, I didn't ask. Something I missed. One thing I did after the interview, I said, you know, I've just got one more question because so many Australians go to Fiji on holidays. And I said, so, you know, all the people you know from Australia, do they come and stop in and visit or go on their trip or what do they do? And she said, oh, no, usually they'll call me and say, you know, can you tell us where we should go, you know? And she says, she asked them, do they want, you know, the all-inclusive and the big breakfast buffet or do they want something more rustic or whatever? So she's the go-to person for that. And then she said, you know, and if we feel like it, we'll just go and visit them. You know, we'll go for a weekend or go for a couple of days. I'm like, oh, my God, that's amazing. She said, yeah, like on the weekends they go to, like, the resort down the road. She said they meet people and say, and the people say, oh, you know, how long have you been here? And they'll say, oh, you know, 12 years. And they say, you do this every weekend? She says, yeah, well, it's kind of like it's what we do. And so she said she meets all these people who think, oh, God, I'm going to come live in Fiji because if I could be staying in this five-star resort every weekend.
Oh, God, yeah. God, I feel exactly the same way. I mean, far out.
Yes.
I think we've talked about this, haven't we, before, about people that live in exotic locations that, and I'm sure we interviewed a bunch of people, didn't we? Like we did Vanuatu or whatever. And it's not all, it's, you know, that from the outside it kind of looks like it's cracked up to be. And I'm sure she does get sick of people thinking about her living in her exotic sort of island, you know, life. Love Siobhan. Fantastic energy, like just sounded like someone you kind of wanted to jump in and have a glass of wine with her, didn't you?
Yeah. It was early, but I was thinking about it. That's true.
Okay, and everyone will be about to notice that the mosque has just kicked off again here in Doha. Yeah. It wouldn't be a Two Fat Expats podcast if we didn't have the call for prayer come at some stage in the background. Nikki Telly, I'll get you to talk about Handmaid's Tale because I am busting to start watching season two, but I am yet to start it. One of the main reasons is we've started, and I think I talked about this last week, watching West Wing with the kids, and we've all become completely engrossed. And so it's become this fantastic little thing of after dinner, we sit down and we all watch an episode of West Wing. And then the kids try their hardest to make sure that we can get a second episode of West Wing. And then we say, oh, we'll watch half an episode. And then we end up going to bed at 10 o'clock because, you know, you've made your way through two episodes of West Wing. I know this is a common family conversation of things that you want to watch that the entire family can watch. It has been fantastic for us. And so it's just been so interesting to see how far we've come in forms of communication and how much government's changed. But also,
they have pages.
Yeah, and they have pages. And the president's a really smart guy who knows lots of stuff.
And I think in one episode, West Wing's one of my favourite shows, but in one of the episodes they talk about someone writing something on a blog. They say, you know, by this time tomorrow it'll be all over the news. Dude, it's got 10 minutes these days.
Oh, so interesting. Okay, movie-wise, I am much more a kind of drama movie person. I think every movie I've ever suggested has been, you know, some sort of drama or maybe a comedy in there somewhere. But I am not an action movie goer. And I was completely outvoted on the weekend because we had all four children here and we had to choose a movie to go and see, and we decided we would go to the IMAX cinema and watch Avengers Infinity Wars. Now,
that movie
was on every 20 minutes in Doha over the weekend. Yeah. Every 20 minutes, Nikki. You could go at 5:10, you could go again at 5:30, you could go at 5:50. Like, it was just incredible. Like, there was no missing it. Anyway, I was not keen at all. It's not my bag. I can honestly say I've never watched another Marvel movie. I just was like, oh, God, okay, because everybody else was really keen to go. I loved it. It was
Hang on. You haven't seen Black Panther?
Nope.
Oh, Kirsty, come on. And if you haven't seen No Iron Man.
No Captain America, none of them. But, of course, now I want to go back and watch all of them. And this week I found myself watching YouTube clips of people telling you where the Easter eggs are in the movies and what means what and what comic to go back and watch and why this meant that and why he had the red rings and why that one had that sword. And I'm totally into it. And suddenly it's all clear to me why people were watching Thor and why people were watching Captain America. It all makes sense now. So, yes, I have decided over the summer when the boys and I are back at the beach, or the summer break, which of course will be winter in Australia, that's what we'll be watching, is catching up on all those scenes. And you can imagine the delight of the boys, because I was like, right, well, we've got to roll all the Iron Men now and we'll be doing that when we got home. They were like, yes, Mum. So, I have to say, we went and saw it in 3D. The whole purpose in the Avengers Infinity Wars is Thanos is trying to get the stones, the Infinity Stones. I have to say, there's a moment in 3D where one of those stones literally sort of flies up and sort of slowly makes its way right in between the centre of your eyes, as only, you know, 3D movies can. It was superb. So if you have a chance to see it in 3D, oh, go do it. It was really, really good. Nikki, tell us about your telly and your movies.
Well, I don't have any movies, but I must go and see if Avengers Infinity Wars is on, Kirsty. It's definitely on the radar for our family. No. We saw Black Panther was the most recent family movie we saw together. Handmaid's Tale Season 2 started. Brilliant. Love it. Brilliant. There's two episodes that are released already, and I think there's another one today or tomorrow. I'm champing up a bit to see it. There is, of course, now, because if there's a TV show, what is there? There's a podcast. So there's lots of podcasts about Handmaid's Tale, but I've listened to two this week. There's an Australian one that's aligned with SBS, so that has access to the material, I guess, so you hear clips from the show and everything. And they've got SBS journalists doing it, and that's called Eyes on Gilead. And there's one I saw mentioned in some Facebook groups. It's an American one. It's two women chatting, and it's called Red All Over. I also finished watching this season's Suits, finished. And, of course, Meghan Markle. That was her last season of Suits before she runs off to marry Prince Harry. And in the last episode, she, of course, got married. But there was so low key. So if that was any other TV series that has been as big as Suits, which I know you also watch and love, and had been the two of the main characters marrying, there would have been huge fanfare all across media everywhere. No, way on the down low. Didn't even know if you didn't sort of go looking for it. So I thought that was quite interesting. Mm. The that the whole thing happened, like a wedding of two main characters on a TV show. Like, you really, you see it everywhere in magazines, just in articles going through your newsfeed. No, nothing. Yeah. It was nowhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, and the new Lost in Space has dropped on Netflix. I've watched a couple of episodes. Not sure. I don't know. Have you watched any Lost in Space?
No, I'm not a Lost in Space girl. But, hey, Nikki, just to go back, because I was thinking we've both watched Handmaid's Tale, but for anyone who didn't watch season one, maybe we just sort of need to explain very quickly the whole premise. So it's a Margaret Atwood's book that was then made into a series. It's sort of a dystopian Netflix series. I think what's interesting, why it sort of gained so much interest when it came out, was not only is it beautifully made and it's hauntingly scary, and it's got Elizabeth Moss, who's just absolutely brilliant, who, of course, was in The West Wing, because I keep seeing her in The West Wing now as President Bartlett's daughter, because yeah. Before that was only thinking about her as Mad Men, being Peggy in Mad Men. I'd sort of forgotten about her being in...
Yeah, before that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, because we could, with the new Trump presidency at the time when it was coming out, and attitudes towards women and conservative attitudes towards women, it became a little bit haunting, didn't it? Because you were thinking, well, could this happen? Because the whole series is based on women losing their rights, and that these handmaids are solely looked at for their reproduction. That's how they're seen, for their value, it's just their reproduction. And I gather it goes along that theme, you know, it continues along that theme in season two.
Yeah. So the first season is the book, basically.
Yes.
And so now we're out of the book. So now that's really interesting, because it was all contained in a particular way, and it followed the book, you know, pretty much faithfully. You know, there were differences, as there always are, but and so now we're in a whole new world. And it really, if you think about season one, for those of you that watched it, it all took place in quite confined areas. So, you know, the house and you know, the Handmaid's training center and all that kind of stuff. But in season two, it's all blown open. So at the end of season one, the handmaid is being put in a truck, taken somewhere, and you don't know where. And season two, first episode, you certainly find out where, and it is absolutely horrifying. And it just basically, the whole sort of landscape expands, and you see much more of Gilead, which is this sort of future America, where all these things are happening, and then obviously Mexico and Canada on either side are where people try to escape to. And they talked in season one about the colonies, you'll be sent to the colonies if there's a problem. And now you're seeing the colonies, so we're seeing some of the people from last season who have ended up in the colonies and how that's working out for them. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited about season two.
Yeah. Oh, sounds scary. Okay. Anything else, telly-wise?
Not telly. What about podcasts for you?
Okay, podcasts for me. I talked last week about the Guardian long reads, and I was telling you about how I liked it because I find I have less and less time to sit and do a long read, so having it on a podcast sort of gets rid of that. And you asked me at the time, oh, is there one that you would suggest? And I sort of went, oh, shivers, I hadn't even thought about that. So this week I did listen to one and I thought, oh, I'm going to tell Nikki about this one. It was called Why I'm Suing Over My Dream Internship. And this sort of stuff really interests me because being someone who blogged and then wrote for different websites and was trying to get a leg up, I'm really interested in how internships have changed over the years. You know, because when I left school and was at university, you know, you might do a couple of weeks work experience for free, but nobody would ever expect that you would continue on, you know, for a 12-week internship and not get paid. Whereas now it seems that the whole landscape has changed of what an employer can actually ask of someone who's there to get the experience. This piece is written about a woman who worked at Monocle. She explains Monocle as a very chic monthly magazine that also has a 24-hour digital radio station. She said the interns are paid £30 a week.
What was it? A week.
A week. Now, what these interns are dreaming of getting is basically published and getting a front page if they possibly can, and having one of their stories featured, you know, so that they can build this, you know, repertoire of work. I thought they talked about, when they went into looking at facts, they said that recent figures suggest that there are at least 70,000 interns working around Britain, and around a third of them are unpaid.
Yeah, so they're working for the experience, but
yeah,
they yeah. really need a job. They really need to be yeah. paid. Yeah, need to be entry level rather than intern.
Yeah, and they spoke to someone called Tanya de Grunwald, who she is from a company called Graduate Fog, who it's a website that's dedicated to the fair treatment of graduates. And she said at the beginning, most internships only lasted for about 2 weeks, and now internships can last for up to a year. Can you imagine? A year of
working. A year for no money.
Yeah. So they said, and this is happening within government organisations as well, which I find really interesting legally, if you can do that. There was something like 467 unpaid interns that were working for 34 organisations that are funded by the Department of Culture, Media or Sport. So I just think it brings in a whole different factor of who is getting this experience, because sure, if you had parents that had a house in London and were willing to keep you under their roof, well, and they were really keen for you to get a job and get experience, yeah, maybe they'd let you work for a year for £30 a week because they were hoping it was on a path to getting somewhere. But if you were the child of, you know, people that lived rurally and had no money to, you know, help fund your rent and existence, there's no way you could afford to work for £30 a week. You know, I just think, so then doesn't that change the scope of people that are getting this experience as well? Like, is this, you know, and I've seen this with large websites in Australia of predominantly the young men and women that get to go and work for them, and they're in Sydney and Melbourne. It's like, you know, there's no country kid who was from moderate, you know, means that could afford to go and live in Sydney and work for nothing and get that sort of 6 months experience. So I'm wondering what it means to our creative world as well.
Yeah. And with so many jobs that they say are going to be sort of robotized in the next sort of 30 years, and the creative world is apparently where jobs are going to stay. So it's interesting that this is not a good sign for the future.
Yeah, so that one was called Why I'm Suing Over My Dream Internship. And, Nikki, one of the things you'd asked me about it too, because you'd said, well, do they use the same voice and whatever, and I don't believe they do, because a couple I've heard have been different voices. But I have to say, it's still nicer to read it than hear it. There is still something about the written word and being carried away in a story, because I went back and read this story as a long read afterwards, and it's still better. There is something about getting lost in the written word and you being able to create the voice for yourself rather than listening to someone's voice. I had a different theory on it after reading it and listening to it.
The other thing, and that's what is so key, what you just said, being able to create the voice. So all the books you read when you were little, and, you know, the books you read now, you create voices and you create things that when you hear them, like when someone else reads them to you, you don't get to do yourself. And I totally acknowledge that. And I think that's something that's an imagination, a creative space that you're missing out on. The other thing about reading is, so you can go back and say, hang on, wow, that's bizarre. Didn't they just say back here something else? And you can go back and look physically.
Yes.
Look
at that.
Yeah. Whereas when you're listening, you're like, oh, God, I'm going to have to rewind and or find it. Yes. And when you're reading, you can just scan your eyes, you know, or when you're reading, you can put it down and walk away and all that kind of stuff. So I admit there is benefits to reading, but I'm much more audio these days, I must admit. So on audio, Gimlet, one of our favourite podcast places, has three new podcasts that they've put out recently. I don't know if you've seen any of them, but Sandra is their new fiction podcast. So in the vein of Homecoming, which was sort of, we talked about Homecoming here on this podcast as well.
I'm busting for you to tell me about this because I haven't listened to it, but I have seen it pop up in my feed all over the place. And the graphics for the cover of Sandra are really good. Like, they're really enticing. So what's it like? Tell me about it.
Okay. So Sandra is about a woman who's in the process of divorcing her husband and getting a job at a high-tech company in a dead-end town. So apparently this town, you get the impression this town has nothing except this high-tech company center. So like Homecoming had big stars, Sandra, Kristen Wiig, is the voice of Sandra. And Sandra is not the name of the woman getting divorced. Sandra is like Alexa or Siri. So Sandra is who you ask the question to. Yes.
Oh.
But in this world, Sandra is actually powered by a group of people sitting in a massive complex space. So, you know, the main character is assigned to the bird section. So she has to answer questions about bird-related topics. So, you know, Sandra, there's a bird at my window. What type of bird is it, Sandra? And then the person on the inside will say, oh, well, can you tell me what colour it is? And then Sandra asks what colour it is. And so it gets very bizarre very quickly. And I don't want to say any more than that because you really have to listen to it. And it's really a crossover between sort of this online, everyone's listening to you all the time thing, and the fact that Siri and Alexa are very robotic. Sandra's kind of a bit more than that in a way. All the episodes have been released, so you can binge listen to it or not. You can hear them anytime. And the episode's about 20 to 30 minutes long. And I was listening to someone else talk about this the other day, and they said when all the episodes of a podcast are released at once, and they were talking about why they thought it was. And one person suggested it was to do with advertising. So if you make a big enough splash and you get enough listeners, it doesn't matter if it's a success or failure because the advertising's already locked in. Whereas if you release it over time and it's not as successful as you hope, the advertisers won't necessarily come on board. But I guess it's a two-way street. Yeah. Could be more successful. Anyway, it's quite interesting. So that's one that I recommend.
Did you listen to the whole lot?
I've listened to it all. I know what happens.
And did you love it?
I really, really did enjoy it. It's very like Homecoming in that it deals with something that's a bit other, but it has a real life component, and it has someone making bad decisions, and you know, it's got all the plot twists, all the good points.
Yeah.
One last podcast I want to talk about that I've been listening to for a little while. Again, this is a more of Australian bent. It's called Long Distance Call, and Eliza Harvey does it. And she's a journalist who lives in Indonesia with her husband, who's also a journalist. And his name is Adam Harvey. He's the ABC's Indonesia correspondent. Now, Eliza Harvey's mother is Geraldine Doogue, and she's a long-serving, quite prominent Australian journalist. And Adam Harvey's father is Peter Harvey. If you're Australian and you in our age group, you'll always know the sign-off, the famous, famous sign-off, Peter Harvey, Canberra. That's kind of like what I grew up hearing when I watched the news every night. So she's a sort of a long journalistic pedigree. So I wonder what their children are going to do in the future. Don't know. Anyway, the premise of the podcast is a weekly call between mother and daughter. And the intro music is actually like the Skype calling tone, you know, the new Skype tone. It's a bit, bit jazzy. Anyway, it's not probably a regular call that you'd recall with your mother, or if it is, they've got a very interesting relationship. But the focus of the podcast is it's on current affairs, news articles and books, etc. So they share their points and different opinions on it, which is quite interesting because they're both journalists and, you know, they're from different generations. So they come from it they come to it from a different point of view. Why it's appealing to me, it's about a current events. There's a lot of Australia, there's a bit of Asia and a bit of international, and it's got like a splash of expat life in Indonesia thrown in, and it's a mother-daughter conversation, and that's a conversation I can't have anymore, so I find it appealing that other people still have those conversations. And Kirsty, for you, it's about 30 minutes.
Yes, I know. And I have picked up on the long distance call, and I love it for all those reasons. I obviously can identify with the new expat life in Jakarta. Yeah. And it takes me back to another time and can really sort of picture, because a very good friend of mine, Sally Sara, was the Indonesian correspondent when I was in Indonesia. So I kind of, it really does take me back to another time of my life of young children and, you know, wanting to have, I think it's so, such a different experience, isn't it, of our yes. early expat lives, Nikki, of when I was a brand new expat in Jakarta, I had to wait for the newspaper to come, you know, 3 days later. And you would hanker to go somewhere where you just even had a magazine from a different country where you could just read the froth in magazines, you know, those Hello magazines and those sorts of things. Now, I haven't bought one of those types of magazines for years and years and years. And it's so funny to me to think of the different person I was or how communications affected my expat life back then, of what choices I made, do you know, of where I got news and information from, what I was starved for, even down to, you know, getting a jar of Vegemite from the supermarket. Every part of our expat life was so different. We were so starved of what we once had and once knew. And I think it's beautiful that we've come this far, that Eliza can hop on Skype and talk to her mother about real-time events and experiences. And I'm sure there are probably even times where she has more of an idea about what's going on in Australia than her mother would, because she's probably watching more real-time news. Well, not probably, she's possibly doing that as well. I think that's always interesting when you tell someone from Australia what's happening in Australia.
I was talking to my brother yesterday. He said, you know, there's a Royal Banking Commission. I said, yeah, dude, I'm on it.
Yeah. No, I love that too. I love that too. My mum will often recite back, you know, word for word, something that I've read or seen, because she just assumes that I wouldn't know that that's going on, because, you know, the fact that I work for an Australian company and, you know, I've got my head in Australia for at least 4 or 5 hours a day. Do you know, it's so different from that, and I'm sure someone could do an amazing Freudian study on what that means to us in our lives, that we now have our heads in our own countries constantly, you know, rather than really detaching ourselves. You know, we just don't get to detach ourselves like we used to.
Yeah.
You know, it's constantly there. Yes, but back to it, yeah, loved it as well, just for that. The whole mother-daughter, I think I'm definitely, when it comes to podcasts, I definitely love to see relationships in action and have that voyeuristic factor of it as well. And I like a bit of realism as well. So, yeah, it's lovely. And well done for her, because I am sure it's something, it's almost like the blog of today, isn't it, in the way that I look back at all the blogs I've written on 4 kids, 20 suitcases, and I think, well, one day my kids will look back and see that little part of my life. One day their kids will look back and be able to listen, you know, to what mum and grandma talked about.
Absolutely. So we're at the end. We're going to have to do some serious editing again this week. But quickly before we go, Kirsty, we have not asked for ages. If you could please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, because it helps people find our podcast and brings other like-minded people to the group and the community.
We haven't asked anyone to review, and I think that's a big mistake of ours, because we need people to review us for us to sort of make our mark on iTunes. So, yeah, could you please go and give us a rating and a review? I don't know if you saw, Nikki, just before we hopped online today, I put a note in the Two Fat Expats page saying that it is our 100th episode is coming up in the next few episodes. I reckon this one might be 90. Is this one 98?
97. I think it's 97. I'm not 100% sure, but I will make a very close note after today.
Yeah. So I've asked people, you know, tell us what you want us to do for our 100th episode. And I saw Rachel had put in a suggestion that she thinks people should hop on SpeakPipe, introduce themselves, where they are, say how long they've been listening to Two Fat Expats, wish us a happy 100th, so that we can collect them. But I'd love just anyone just to hop on SpeakPipe and, yeah, say hi, tell us where you are and what you'd like to hear in the next 100 episodes, what's been your favourite out of the last 100, what you think we should dump, or, and feel free to be harsh and brutal if you want to, but I think that would be great. So if you can't rate or review us on iTunes, come across to SpeakPipe and choose a message.
Yes, thank you, thank you. We can't wait to hear from you. Okay, good chats, Kirsty, good chats.
Okay, see you later.
Bye-bye.